You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Andy Borowitz in today for Leonard Lopate. Over the last 6 years, the U.S. government has pursued a series of aggressive prosecutions on Wall Street for the crime of insider trading. In fact, since the 2008 financial crisis, it seems to be one of the few crimes that have reliably sent financial titans to prison. But my next guest wonders whether all this focus on insider trading has come at the expense of investigating other financial crimes. Charles Gasparino is a senior correspondent for the Fox Business Channel and author of Circle of Friends, The Massive Federal Crackdown on Insider Trading, and Why the Markets Always Work Against the Little Guy.
Can you say that all in one breath? They always make these titles longer than they should be.
I don't think it was long enough, Charles. We need a little more there. Now, it's published by Harper Business, and I'm pleased to welcome Charles Gasparino to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Hello, Charles.
Thanks for having me.
So, yes, insider trading, it is in the news quite a bit. I sort of see there's a story about SAC Capital in
Steve
the New
Cohen.
York Times pretty much every day. They
right.
should have a whole section of the paper devoted just to that. But let's talk, because insider trading is obviously something that's been going on for a long time, but there's been a big focus in the last few years, all these government investigations. Now, your book focuses on an FBI probe which is called Perfect Hedge.
Right.
Can you explain what that is and how did that investigation start?
Well, it started with a guy at the SEC who basically put two and two together. I mean, it's fascinating how these things start. They often, you know, start with a tip. And this guy brought in a guy named Raj Ranam, big hedge fund manager, and then brought him in. He felt Raj lied to him, kept investigating, found a cooperator, got a court order to tap his phone. And guess what? The rest is history.
The rest is history.
I mean, and they found all these other people. And you know what? It came right after the financial crisis. They couldn't find anybody really in the financial crisis. So then they had insider trading, they meaning the Justice Department, sitting right there. And part of the book talks about the sort of way they used it from a political standpoint. You know, you don't have anything on Dick Fuld and Lehman Brothers, but we got all these great, sexy insider trading cases.
Are you suggesting that it kind of, in a way, gives the government cover? You know, that they weren't really able to put anybody away for the financial crisis, so they're going after these other guys as kind of a distraction?
I'm losing my voice, just so you know.
That's
because,
okay.
That's all I've been doing is humping this book for the last sort of
I don't think you're allowed to say that on NPR, but
well,
that's okay.
Well, we meant it. I meant it in a very generic way.
Okay.
But or is the FCC coming down right now?
I don't think. We'll take all the listeners.
Okay.
I think the NSA is listening, but that's nothing special.
Listen, these were real cases.
Uh-huh.
Don't make any doubt about it. The FBI spent tremendous resources. They got people on tape. People were obviously flouting the law of what was going on. However, you have to ask yourself, was insider trading the crime of the century? Is that such a ripoff that you divert resources from Bernie Madoff-type ripoffs, from financial crisis crimes, to catch a guy trading on a tip and putting him in jail for 10 years? And I do raise that question. Listen, I don't want to diminish from the fact that this is a crime story. I mean, I basically cover the investigators, cover the wiretaps, cover the guys involved in this stuff. There clearly is a violation of the law. However, you know, you got to ask yourself, is this crime of insider trading worth the effort to when you divert resources away from financial crisis stuff, which blew up the economy, Bernie Madoff, which cost, you know, the people were ripped off in the billions by one guy. So I do raise that issue. And I raise the issue because I define what insider trading is, essentially. And I say, look at it from the standpoint of the victim. If you're going to sell a stock, and I happened to buy it, and I had insider trading, I had some inside information, you were going to sell it anyway. You know, you made your decision. You know, I made money, but I didn't really victimize you. The feds would say I victimized the market by trading on this information that's not out there broadly. But, you know, when you start defining it, you really start thinking of where are the real victims. And then you got to ask yourself, is it worth a press conference every other day by the U.S. attorney, the current one, Preet Bharara. I mean, it is, there is a political element here, I think, that people need to know. Now, does that mean it's not a crime? Do I say this is a good thing? Well, absolutely not. I mean, it's not a good thing. There is a law. And people were violating this law and still may be violating this law with abandon. And it's taken out some huge players. Andy, I mean, if you think about it, SAC Capital and Steve Cohen, he might be the most successful investor of the past 20 years. He's more successful than Warren Buffett. If you look at him, look at his record. The government, not me, the government believes that success was made, at least in part, on some insider trading. Okay, so this is a very serious thing. People go to jail for decades on this. One of the fund managers involved in the whole Cohen SAC investigation, Matthew Martoma, I believe his trial is going to be in the fall. He faces 20 years in jail for insider trading. I mean, it's serious stuff.
I'm Andy Borowitz. I'm in today for Leonard Lopate here on WNYC and WNYC.org. And I'm talking to Charles Gasparino, who is the author of, we're just going to call it Circle of Friends.
Yeah, you don't have to read the rest. I don't know.
But it is about the massive federal crackdown on insider trading. I won't read the entire subtitle. But you've been delving into the story. But you've raised about 19 interesting things in your opening monologue. So I'd like to go back and ask you a couple of questions. You know, you said that the government couldn't really put anybody away for the 2008 financial crisis, the meltdown. And so then they moved on to the sexy topic of insider trading. But what effort was made to investigate the guys at these banks, the guys at AIG and right. at the banks that got us into this mess? Was there a massive investigation into this? And they kind of just said, we couldn't find anything.
I wouldn't say it was massive. They did look into it. Mm-hmm. And they quickly, meaning they, who is they? The U.S. Attorney's Office.
And who were they focusing on?
Oh, they were Dick Fuld and mm-hmm. Lehman Brothers, the people that ran Bear Stearns. Mm-hmm. And they were focusing on whether or not these folks misled the public in terms of how much risk they were taking that blew up the market. And that mm-hmm. was the focus of my last book, The Sellout. The problem is nailing people on that sort of crime, misleading the general public in terms of how much risk, is very difficult. I mean, there's a fine line between being a true believer and, you know, having irrational exuberance, right? Where you say, we're going to be fine.
And it's not a crime to make a bad bet, right?
Not a crime to make a bad bet, right. And purposely misleading. And you got to prove that they purposefully misled the public, misled the investing public, you know, cooked their books, did accounting fraud. And if you look at some of the accounting maneuvers they used, they were like very much gray areas, mm-hmm. meaning they weren't necessarily fraud. So that crime, they quickly concluded, I would say, sometime in 2009, that it was almost impossible to prosecute. If you look at it, John Corzine of MF Global wasn't prosecuted. You would think he was. He misused customer cash. Mm-hmm. Well, prove that he purposely misused. I don't believe he did. It's a very difficult crime to prove. And then I spoke with prosecutors. What do they have here? They had an investigation that was launched by the SEC and the FBI mainly in New York. A guy named Sanjay Wadhwa at the SEC, you know, a guy that, you know, basically did an amazing job on this thing back during it started during the Bush years. And also in 2009 comes around and they have this case where big players are caught on tape. You know, they it's a sexy case because these tapes are wild. It involves major players in the markets. And, you know, then the question is, you know, what do we do with this? Well, we obviously prosecute. And I think what the book points out is you also play it up. Mm-hmm. This becomes a political game. And, you know, listen, I like Preet Bharara, to be honest with you, the U.S. attorney for the Southern District, decent guy. Part of me says he had to blow this up because, you know, he had to make a public relations spectacle of this because his boss in Washington wanted the public to know we hold fat cats responsible, mm-hmm. right? His boss being Eric Holder and the president of the United States, President Barack Obama. He's the president appoints the U.S. attorney for the Southern District. So part of me says he has to do it, but he has to do it for a reason. There is a political element that you keep reading about insider trading right now.
Right. Well, it is, you know, we have to go after the fat cats, but we're going after fat cats for something different from what you think we might be going after
right.
them for. We're all
right.
upset about our 401ks going down the drain, but that's not what this is about. This is a very different crime.
This is a crime. If Preet was sitting here, right, defending himself, I'm going to play Preet Bharara for a second. He would say, listen, this is a crime on the market, on the integrity of the market. You getting information that the market doesn't have and making money destroys the integrity of the market, and it also makes people leery of investing. They think the deck is stacked
right.
against them. Me playing myself, I would come back and say, well, Mr. Bharara, if you ask people why they're not in the market right now, there's a lot of reasons why they're not. It's probably not insider trading. And by the way, if you want an inside trade on stocks, you're going to – I don't think the average guy – listen, when you watch some of these business shows, You see people say, buy this.
Jim Cramer.
I'm not going to say his name. But you know what? It's the dumbest thing in the world. Because
right.
even without inside information, you, the average investor, don't have the information edge that the professional trader has. So why even mess with it? Buy an index fund. Mm-hmm. It's cheap.
Well, that's what Warren Buffett says. Yeah, do that. Do that. But now, why don't you... Since we're talking all about insider trading, why don't you define what insider trading is as the government defines it?
Well, we should point out that there is no specific law. There are a bunch of
great.
That's one of the reasons why it's hard to prove unless you got someone on tape.
It would be helpful if there were a law, wouldn't it be?
It would be. So yeah. they're going on court precedent, so there's facts and circumstances. But boiled down, it's the trading on material, meaning it's important. It can move the market. Non-public information.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be obtained a certain way. It has to fit certain criteria based on court precedent. But that's what it is. And one of the reasons why it's always been traditionally hard to prove. We should point out Michael Milken was. I guess there were rats like Ivan Boesky that helped nail Michael Milken, but he was not convicted on insider trading. He was convicted on a lot of other stuff. It's a notoriously difficult crime to prove because in essence it's a crime of communication. Right. And you have to be able to prove that communication. What made this one different is that they finally started using wiretaps. I never knew this, but this was kind of fascinating. Let's say, Andy, you're an insider trader, right? And I'm a cooperator. They caught me and they said, listen, if you want less jail, you got to cooperate. If I have a wire on me, I can talk to you without a court order. I can bug you. I can, you know, we can listen on my phone. Feds can listen without a court order. But in order to get your phone tapped, I do need a court order. And that's what they do. They did here, much like they do against the mob, much like they did against, you know, drug crime lords. They put wiretaps on people's phones. And that was key to catching these guys.
Are they using the RICO statutes to do that, or are they doing it?
They don't use the RICO. They use something called Title III of the Omnibus. It's in the book. I can't remember the exact, but it was a law passed in the late 60s which allowed wiretapping. RICO may be used. That's interesting to bring that up. RICO was used by Rudy Giuliani when he's the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District against Drexel and Michael Milken. There is some talk right now of RICO being used to possibly go after SEC and Steve Cohen. So RICO might rear its ugly head here. It's not that easy. You just can't use it. You know, you have to show certain – you have to meet certain criteria, which is very difficult. There is a bar here, but that might materialize in the next, I would say, month or so.
Now, you mentioned that it's very hard to prove this, but the Martha Stewart case, she was convicted of insider trading.
She
correct?
Was not.
No, that was, she was, what was it, perjury? What was
lie,
it?
Lie.
Lie.
Now,
lie.
We should point out that the Securities and Exchange Commission, which doesn't convict, it brings civil charges, did charge her with insider trading,
mm-hmm.
That she misappropriated information that was given to her by her broker's assistant. It's a lower bar, but they were able to do that, and she neither admitted or denied wrongdoing. She settled that case, but she spent time in jail was for lying to people
right.
who were investigating whether she did insider trading.
Right. I want to get back to Martha Stewart in just a minute because I have a little question about that. But I'm speaking with Charles Gasparino, a senior correspondent for the Fox Business Network and the author of Circle of Friends. I'm going to do the whole thing this time. The Massive Federal Crackdown on Insider Trading and Why the Markets Always Work Against the Little Guy.
I did not make that up.
It's That's published by Harper Business. And we'll have more about insider trading and Martha Stewart after a break. I'm Andy Borowitz, and today for Leonard Lopate, WNYC, WNYC.org, and I'm talking to Charles Gasparino. He's the author of Circle of Friends, all about insider trading. Now, before the break, I mentioned Martha Stewart, and I just wanted to share this one moment, my Martha Stewart moment, which was when she was on trial, I somehow found myself sitting at lunch with a group of her friends. I'm not going to explain how that transpired, but they were all bemoaning the fact that she was being made an example of. And what became very clear in the course of this conversation was that in this, we'll call it class in society, these investors would never invest on any other basis other than inside information. It was very clear that the only time they ever called up their broker to invest in anything was if they had a tip. And they were the way this was being discussed, it was so casual. I was a fly on the wall. I was sort of thinking, oh, I guess this is really why The little guy, as you would put it, feels at a tremendous disadvantage in the market because I don't have any of this insider stuff.
Right.
Maybe I'll invest in an index fund. But I question a little bit your characterization of insider trading as sort of a victimless crime, because isn't investing by its very nature kind of a zero-sum game? I mean, somebody makes money, someone loses
right.
money. So if I'm, you know, I'm at the table, you know, and I'm a rube, which I am, by the
right.
way.
So am I.
And I think, oh, okay, well, I've got a good shot here because I'm pretty smart and blah,
right.
blah, blah. Meanwhile, somebody else actually knows that some Alzheimer's drug is going to pass a critical trial.
Or not pass.
Or not pass.
As in the latest case with SEC Capital.
Exactly. So it is a zero-sum game, and I am losing by virtue of the fact that I'm a rube and somebody else has inside information.
No, you're losing not because he has inside information. You're losing because you made a bad bet.
Right.
He is making money. Do you see what I'm saying? You're going to lose anyway. That's
right.
my point. I mean,
right.
listen, I'm not supporting this stuff. Though
right.
I want to make
no.
it clear.
We're having a lively conversation.
Right. I'm being a little bit of a devil's advocate with the
right.
public and their hour. Listen, no. When you talk to an average guy in the street, go to a bar in Queens and Brooklyn and say, I'm in favor of inside information. Well, the bartender might smack you in the head, right?
Right.
For obvious reasons. You want, you know, this is unfair, inherently unfair. But when you start breaking it down into, okay, we put people in jail upwards. You can go to jail for 20 years on this stuff. And you start saying to yourself, what really did you do wrong? Who did you harm? The reality is your bad bet was a bad bet that was made. You're going to lose money anyway. I'm going to make money based on having an informational edge that the government deems is illegal. And while I'm not supporting it, I'm saying, and I point this out during the book, they spent a lot of money on this. There are thousands and thousands of wiretaps that were used in this case. Those wiretaps cost something like $60,000 for 30 days. I mean, they went on and on. They went on for 2 years. There were millions of dollars spent on this investigation. While you could have diverted some of those millions and maybe got some people on mortgage fraud, got some people that are really ripping people off. I mean, when I see scams, I think of pyramid schemes, Ponzi schemes, and, you know, outright market manipulation. So I'm just saying, put it in perspective. That's all. Listen, part of this book was defining insider trading.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you define it, and if you define it in an intellectually honest way, that's where you come to the conclusion I'm coming to. Now, it's funny. I ran into Preet Bharara at the Washington's Correspondents Dinner a couple months ago, and he goes, hey, Charlie, I hear you're writing a whole book about he said, so. He knew I was writing. So you're writing a whole book about a crime that isn't a crime. And I said, nah, not really. You did. You actually arrested like 70 people, put them in jail. So, I mean, there is a story here. And I don't quite believe it's not a crime. I'm just asking people, if you really want to be intellectually honest, you got to put it in perspective. Now, that said, I write a book that's a crime story. Mm-hmm. I mean, I follow the paper trail. I follow the investigators. I follow the bad guys. And people know they're violating the law. I mean, there's no doubt about it, and that's not a good thing.
Right. But what's sticking in my craw a little bit is when you're characterizing my uninformed investment based on no insider trading as a bad bet. It really isn't a bad bet. It's a bet based on the information that we're all supposed to have.
Right.
So it's maybe the best bet to the best of my ability, but it's sort of like saying—
But that's the best of your ability.
Right.
Think about that. I mean, listen— I think they should put me in the NBA, okay? I'm 5'7", 5'8", on a good day. I should play in the NBA. I'm not good enough to play in the NBA. And I think when you talk about trading in the markets, making bets in the markets, remember, there are professional traders out there that will always have a professional edge.
Not to mention criminals. They have an advantage over us, too.
They do. But I'm also saying in this thing, you know, you don't have to compete with them.
Right.
You can ignore the guy saying, go buy this stock, buy that stock. Be a long-term investor. Listen, I watch Business News. Why? I mean, not to get stock tips, to understand where I think the economy and the markets are going, mm-hmm. what the Fed might do, which is the biggest thing right now in the markets. And then you make your bets accordingly. Do you buy index funds? Listen, if you bought, forget about buying all these crazy stocks that you hear about. Just to say you bought an index that followed the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which they have, or an index that followed the S&P. Back in March 2009, you held it to today. Well, forget about insider trading. You made a lot of money. You
right.
made more money than all these hedge funds.
And a lot of the hedge funds did poorly over that period because they were doing more exotic
right.
bets.
Right.
Well, that's reassuring. It's reassuring up to a point. But you actually kind of made one of my arguments for me when you were saying, you know, well, if you don't have all the information that the professionals have, then, you know, stay out of the game. And I think that's one of the concerns that people have about insider trading, which is that it has a chilling effect on the individual investor because we say, look, I mean, I'm a pretty rotten basketball player. I'm not as good as you. I mean, in terms of your NBA ambitions. But, you know, if I'm
fantasies.
Like, if I'm like going to a playground, I think I can maybe play a pickup game with some guys.
Right.
And then LeBron James shows up, I'm probably not going to play in that game. And if people have this impression that they're going to be overmatched because there are all these guys who have insider information, I must say my little lunch with Martha Stewart's friends had kind of a chilling effect on my interest in the stock market because I thought, well, man, if everybody else at the table has an insider tip. So I think that's a legitimate concern. Like, do we need the average rube like me to have some skin in the game?
Well, why do you need to buy individual stocks? I mean, listen,
I don't. I buy index funds. So
then you have Then you're not being gamed out because of insider trading. As a matter of fact, if you have a portfolio manager, he has access to information. Mm-hmm. And listen, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm asking people to put in perspective. And I'll tell you, I think the government should put in perspective. People are going to jail. We're filling the jails with these white collar guys for 10. I mean, they're in jail for 10 years for this stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, they purposely flouted they said what my mom would say to the law. No doubt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a good thing.
I like that you can't quote your mom.
I did the thing under the chin, right?
Okay.
But anyway, but that's a bad thing, right?
Right.
But you have to. Does the punishment fit the crime? I don't think people are directly victimized by this.
So you think that the sentences are too stiff, in other words?
You know, and I think, you know, yeah, I do. I'm for putting, listen, you've read my stuff over the years. You know, Wall Street guys see me in bars and they throw stuff at me. So I'm just telling you.
That's a badge of honor, Charles.
I know it is, but I'm not an easy guy on Wall Street. But, you know, I put this stuff in perspective. There are real ripoffs and then there's this stuff.
I'm Andy Borowitz. I'm in today for Leonard Lopate on WNYC, WNYC.org. I am speaking to Charles Gasparino. He's got a new book out called Circle of Friends, and it's all about insider trading. Now, it's a crime story. It's a great crime story.
Thank you.
And you tell it really well. Can we go through sort of the central investigation here, this perfect hedge now? Everybody is as familiar with this as some readers are. This was all about Rajaratnam, is that how it's pronounced?
It's about him and another guy named David Slane, who there was actually two investigations.
The Galleon Group.
Right. So there's two investigations going on. There's something known as Perfect Hedge, which involved a cooperator, a guy that was a trader at Morgan Stanley. They caught him doing something bad, and they said, okay, here's the deal, pal. And they showed up to his, they caught him, two FBI agents approached him on the street. They brought him into a diner, and they read him the Riot Act. They said, listen, here's the deal, pal. You go to jail for 10 years, or... because we could put you away for 10 years, where you wear a wire and you go undercover and you catch all your circle of friends. The guy's name was David Slane. He was a top trader at Morgan Stanley and other places, worked at Galleon Group. I worked all over the place. They thought he was key because he worked at so many places and he could bring a lot of people in. Then there was something called the Galleon investigation. And similar stuff, different people. And it ultimately focused on a guy named Rajaratnam, one of the biggest traders around. Coming out of those two investigations, they got so much information. They found so many cooperators. They then started focusing on Steve Cohen. We should point out Steve Cohen at SEC Capital is, like I said, probably on paper the best investor over the last 20 years.
He has about a 30% return every year or something
after
like that.
Enormous fees. He takes 3% management fee. Then he takes 50% of the profits, and he still gives you 30%.
And his investors are leaving in droves
because of
the investigation.
Yeah, and they've almost effectively shut him down because there's a momentum building that he may escape specific criminal charges, but he might get thrown out of the business on a civil charge, or they might shut the fund down through some sort of a RICO charge or some sort of criminal indictment of the fund. It's unclear where they're going. We should point out, he says he's innocent. He's never been charged. His fund paid a civil penalty, fairly substantial, a couple months ago. But what makes investigators, the people at the FBI and the SEC think he's, you know, not doing things on the up and up, is that there are so many people around him at SEC who have been in trouble.
And he took the Fifth last month, which is never a good sign.
Before grand jury. Well, we should point out that people take the Fifth all the time.
Yeah, we're allowed to. It's one of the few amendments we have left. So
if Martha Stewart took the Fifth, she would not have gone to jail.
Really? She would never have lied.
And the SEC would have maybe had a civil case against her, which she would have settled without admitting or denying wrongdoing. Because what she did did not meet the barrier for criminal insider trading.
Well, now what's going on is they have several of his underlings who have been arrested, and they're trying to get somebody to roll, right? And
flip.
Flip. I like that term.
If they investigate this
guy
stuff
Martoma
like
down in Boca Raton, right?
Right.
What's his status? Isn't he about to go on trial soon?
He's about to go on trial. He's refusing to flip. You know, he's got a very good lawyer, Richard Strasberg. Kind of interesting. Richard Strasberg was Peter Bakanovic's lawyer. Remember, Peter Bakanovic was Martha Stewart's broker,
right?
Who ultimately went to jail. So he's known for as a guy that will fight the case. Investigators believe Martoma was the best chance they had at a criminal indictment of Steve Cohen if he would flip. He's so far said no. There have been stories saying that, you know, they've given up on the criminal case because he won't flip. However, I hear there could be a superseding indictment, meaning more charges, which may put pressure on him to do something.
We have to do a little mind reading, but somebody like Martoma, who's being so steadfast, do you think that's because he really thinks his boss is innocent, or do you think there's some inducement for him to stay quiet? What's your guess?
I'll tell you what. I spoke to a very, very high-ranking Justice Department official on this who's intimately involved in the case, so you might be able to figure out who I'm talking to, but he spoke to me on background. He said he wants this guy, this prosecutor wants to try the drug case. And the drug, he had somebody on tape that they knew he was involved in drugs and dealing drugs, and he couldn't bring himself to tell his family that he was a crook. And he said, screw it, I'm just going to fight this thing. I'm not a crook. He couldn't bring himself to admit that he did something wrong. And I think prosecutors are looking at Martoma the same way. There's something, this happens a lot with people you think are dead to rights going to jail. You know, mob guys generally, you know, you're in the mob, let's face it, you know, you are what you are. You're in a criminal organization. You take the blood oath. A lot of people aren't. They're businessmen. You know, Matthew Martoma was, I believe, took business ethics. He was one of his specialties. It takes a lot for people like that, they believe, to basically turn the switch and say, okay, I am guilty. I'm a bad guy.
Because he has an image. He has an image to himself and
to his family.
Family.
That's their surmise. Now, maybe he thinks he's innocent.
Now, the hedge fund industry isn't very regulated at all, is it? I mean, is there anything to keep abuses from happening other than maybe the deterrent of some you know, arrests, some convictions?
It's increasingly more regulated, and I think the deterrent, I think that this is an interesting deterrent. Okay, if you talk about, you know, can you regulate, like with Dodd-Frank, all these banks in terms of risk taking, it's very difficult. Because what you're doing is you're regulating them. You're telling them, well, you need more capital here. It's very difficult to sort of observe a big bank. But it's kind of not so difficult to regulate behavior if you put someone in jail for 10 years. So here's where I'll make your argument. It's very easy to catch insider trading, right? If they have like systems where they can find trading before key events. It's very easy to spot it. It's a little more difficult to convict because you got to get wiretaps, but they do that now.
Right.
With all that and putting people in jail for 10 years, there has been, from what I understand, a scaling back of insider trading. It's not, you know, that is, I think the deterrent of 10 years in jail plus the sophisticated investigative techniques that they have, they can spot it pretty easy. And now that you have wiretaps, you can catch people because it's a crime of communications. This stuff is being I don't think the rampant insider trading that we've seen before 2009 will exist again. I mean, I think this is one thing they've stamped out. You know, you can make the case that, you know, okay, they stamped it out. Who cares? You know, but a lot of people might say that they should stamp out other things. But I'll tell you, one of the problems with the financial crisis and risk-taking, and like I said, it's a hard thing to prove. If you did put a couple guys in jail for that, That would have a deterrent effect.
Mm-hmm.
Jail deters people from doing bad things.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any? Do you have a wish list? Are there? You don't have to name names, but are there some people in your mind who you wish had gone been put away for the 2008?
God.
I mean, you're not going to get sued or anything. I mean, no one's listening. No, but I mean, in your mind, do you think that there were there criminal offenses? Were there things that were that people should have been punished for with jail time?
The securities laws are written. Yeah, probably. And I think it was outrageous that you know, CEOs would – I was at CNBC at the time. CEOs would come on CNBC and say, we're fine. Everything is cool. And then the next day they're dead. You know,
right.
The company – I mean, there should have been something, at least even a civil charge, to say that you can't do stuff like this. And, you know, good lawyers will pick that apart saying, well, how do you know he didn't really mean it? I mean, it's harder to prove, but – I really think some CEO needed to, you know, face the music on that. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a bad thing. You know, you just, you know, either keep your mouth shut or if you're fighting for survival. I think one of the smart things that Corzine did with MF Global is that he didn't do stuff like that. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And, you know, I get hate mail all the time because people think at Fox that I defend John Corzine because of his connections with the Obama administration. I'm not really defending him. I'm just saying I don't think what he did was criminal. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? He did something stupid. And, you know, call for what it is. It was dumb. He was reckless. He didn't segregate the customer accounts so they used customer money to pay their bills when they shouldn't. It wasn't criminal.
I've been speaking with Charles Gasparino, a senior correspondent for the Fox Business Network and author of Circle of Friends, all about insider trading. It's published by Harper Business. Charles, thanks so much for coming on in.
Thanks for having me. I hope the FCC hasn't shut you down.